strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Remember the rule, if it's too loud, you're too old. But thanks for being here. Happy Friday from the Mike Broomhead Show. We got to talk about water. It is an ongoing topic. It's one of the topics that is, I'm so interested in this topic. I've done some work in this industry on the provision side. What I mean is, as in part of my electrical contracting company, I worked with the companies that provide water in the town of Maricopa, out in Florence, some other private well sites, wastewater treatment plants. So water has always been an issue. I've been involved in, I'm not the politics of it, but in the provision of it. And, you know, ADEQ and the environmental quality, they want to make sure that it's quality water, that it's treated appropriately to either be reused as watering lawns or as drinking water pulled out of the ground and properly treated so it's safe. But now we are talking about the shortage, and there was a report that came out that said the West Valley and the Far East Valley may not have enough water to keep up with growth over the next 100 years, which is a requirement to get a property or a development through the permitting process. So I want you to hear the governor. She talked about this. Why is she pausing growth in these suburbs?
As required by law, we will pause approvals of new assured water supply determinations that rely on pumping groundwater, ensuring that we don't add to any future deficit. This pause will not affect growth within any of our major cities where robust water portfolios have been proven to cover current and future demands. I cannot emphasize that enough.
So it is not going to affect the major cities. I'm a Phoenician. It's not going to affect those projects as far as those being built. But what will it do to the urban sprawl if we are still going to have a massive need for housing? What do we do now? That's part of it. So she goes on to talk about that. This is the governor, Governor Hobbs, talking about the future and water.
My message to Arizonans is this. We are not out of water, and we will not be running out of water. Because as we have done so many times before, we will tackle the water challenges that we face with integrity and transparency. I won't bury my head in the sand, cut corners, or put short-term interests over the state's long-term prosperity. This proven approach is how we built a thriving Arizona, and I know it's how we'll continue to prosper long into the future.
You know, it also adds questions about farmland. And when talking about industrial projects, they say won't be affected, but it is going to be affected by housing. I had this conversation because most people would think as you take farms away, whether especially hay or cotton, which are very water intensive crops, which in the far West Valley, there's a lot of those. When you remove those and replace them with houses, you would think, man, those houses are using a lot more water than the crops do. And the answer to that is it's not true. It's about the same because cotton and hay are very water-intensive crops. So when you look at the growth we've been having and the way we're moving west and east, let's for a moment go east and talk about Queen Creek. Queen Creek just had a new battery plant approved. A bunch of jobs are moving out to Queen Creek. What will this do to existing home values and the affordability for startup couples or individuals buying their first home in the Far East Valley? For a very long time, people moved to the furthest edges of town because of affordability. That's what you would do. You would buy your home. Growth would come your way. You'd gain equity. You could move in town when you got a bit older. But that may not be the case now. And what will it do to projects that are not yet planned or were on hold or whatever for the major cities? Because if there are not going to be any restrictions in Phoenix and Mesa and Chandler and Peoria and Glendale in the West Valley, are those major cities now going to see an increased demand for housing? Are we going to start seeing a tall city? Now, we can't have it near the airport. Obviously, that's why downtown Phoenix, you don't see the huge skyscrapers, and that has a lot to do with Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. Same thing with Tempe on the other side of the airport. But going north and going in other parts of the city, are we going to start seeing some of these very tall apartment buildings or condominium complexes like we have seen some in downtown Phoenix, just not as tall as other cities? Are we going What will that do to not just property values, but what does it do to traffic? Does it do to the infrastructure? These are all things that people talk about. One of the other questions is, what about California? The reason why I asked this question is when you talk about environmentalists, when you say environmentalism, most people would naturally believe that California is loaded with more environmentalists than Arizona is. And that may be ideologically the ideal logs, it might be. But when it comes to practice, Arizona has led the way. Arizona has done an excellent job with technology and advancements in not only conserving water, but storing rainwater and how we do it underground and the way that we try to squeeze every drop of water that we can into storage. So because we know the need that we have. Our neighbors to the west in California have not done that. As a matter of fact, they've been lamenting the wet winter they had last winter with the floods they had, but that water was running off straight into the ocean. And there were many people, Californians included, that said we should be capturing this water. Well, the problem is with the agreements that are made with Colorado River, Central Arizona Project, Salt River Project, but especially the Colorado River, where you have multiple states drawing from that water, and there's now been restrictions on that because of the drop in the Colorado River. Arizona has a right to ask that questions of our neighbors and say, we've spent billions of dollars because we live in a desert. We understand the need, but we have been conserving. We have been doing the right thing. We are light years ahead of California. You are now playing catch up. So why is it that you are still going to not make deep changes and we are restricting growth in the far west and the far east valley? I understand, you know, that's part of being a part of a federal government, you know, being a state in a federal government is we have agreements with other states. But this is one of those questions everyone should be asking. Arizona, and this isn't a slap in the face to California. It is a compliment to the state of Arizona. We have done a much better job of water management than our neighbors. Out of necessity, we've done it. We continue to do it. We're going to continue to do it. We're going to find new ways. But now our neighbors' lack of this behavior is affecting us because we are restricting growth at a time when we are growing by leaps and bounds. How will this affect incoming business? Because industry looks at a few different things. They look at the tax base. They look at regulations. They do that as far as their business goes. But they look at the workforce. They want an educated workforce that they can draw from. ASU has really upped their game on that one. So is the other universities. But I'm talking about the Valley, and that predominantly is ASU. But also after that, they're looking at the availability for housing. Where do our people live? Where can they buy a home? Am I going to be able to bring my people with me because they can afford to sell their home where they are and buy one here? And if you're going to build one of these major companies in the East Valley, like the one that's going up in Queen Creek, what do you tell your employees? Commute? And that's going to be part of this. And we'll find out. The other one is how long? How long before this is lifted? What has to happen? And we'll find that out in the coming days. Coming up in a moment, the Peoria school board member, a couple of them, have been warned against quoting the Bible at school board meetings. We're going to talk about this First Amendment question coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, we've got Food Bank Fridays going on right now, helping our friends at St. Mary's Food Bank. Gatos and Chad have been doing this for a long time. It's Gatos and Chad Food Bank Fridays. If you can make a donation, we're going to try to make it easier for you. Just text the word food to 411-923. That's food to 411-923 for Food Bank Fridays, presented by the UPS Store. Oh, we're going to have some fun here. This is going to be fun. The Peoria School Board, two of the members of the Peoria School Board have gotten a letter warning against quoting Bible verses at a meeting. So initially, I wanted to go down the First Amendment road and talk about A, freedom of speech, B, freedom of religious expression. Is this a church's separation of church and state issue, which I will tell you doesn't exist. And usually when it's challenged in court, it gets tossed. That's where I wanted to go. But I felt it's Friday. I'm in a good mood. I thought, let's take a better approach, a more sarcastic approach to this. Aren't these the people that don't want any books banned at all in the school library? Aren't these people that are so upset that sexualized books that have illustrations of very graphic sex should be available to kids, and we should have drag queen story hour for elementary school kids and freedom of expression and all those books should be available? And how dare you ban books from kids? You're a book banner and you're a Nazi and you're a fascist and you want to burn and ban books. Bible's just a book, right? Just a book. If you're not a believer, it's just a book. And if somebody wanted to quote Shakespeare at a school board meeting, if I wanted to get up and quote Shakespeare, first it would shock people that they even knew that I read Shakespeare. But if I wanted to quote Ron White, the redneck comedian, that wouldn't surprise anyone. But if I wanted to quote Ron White, I sure could. If I walked in and did my best Bill Ingvall and said, "Here's your sign," no one would have a problem with that. If I quoted Shakespeare, if I quoted any book, pick a book, nobody would complain. But here we are, Bible verse, and you get a letter. Don't do this again. So you wonder why we've got $900 million going into the school choice voucher program. Why 100,000 families? It was 11,000 a couple of years ago. It's ballooning to about 100,000 is the prediction in 2024. You wonder why parents are doing this. You wonder why families are concerned. You had a Peoria school board member that quoted a Bible verse, and they said it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck than to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Matthew 18:6, said Hill during a board meeting in May. Oh my gosh, let's send her a letter. They're book banners. They are the other side of the same coin, except they believe you should be silenced if they don't want to hear what you have to say. They're offended by what you say, and then you should have to stop. We're going to send an official letter. You can't say that here anymore. Show me where it says I can't say that. I would love to have one of these, the Alliance Defending Freedom, or any of these organizations challenge this, because you know they would lose in court. I'm not talking about the school board members. I'm saying the ones that wrote the letter. When it gets challenged, it loses. In the end, if I want to speak my mind, and in order for me to speak my mind, they always say, if you have something wise to say, you say it. And if you don't have anything wise to say, you quote somebody else, which is why I use quotes all the time. One of my favorite books that I've ever read in my life is a very short compilation of sermons that were preached by Martin Luther King Jr. The book is called A Strength to Love. And he even said at the beginning of this that he didn't want to write it because sermons are supposed to be heard. They're not supposed to be read, that you need to hear the inflection, and you've got to be there in the context of when it was said. But there were so many great sermons and life lessons and things that were said by Martin Luther King Jr. in those sermons at such an important time in the civil rights movement that he wrote the book. And it's one of my favorites. I've read it on the plane a few times. It's a small book, but it's compelling. One of the quotes in there I've used many times speaking in public of Martin Luther King Jr. is he said, "We will never gain the respect of white people in the South or anywhere else if we are willing to trade our children's future for our own personal comfort and safety." Now, that may be a paraphrase because I may have missed a couple of the words. It's been a long time since I've quoted it. But when you say those things, I'm quoting Martin Luther King Jr. from one of his books. Anybody can complain about that? If they are, why? How can you? I have a First Amendment right to express myself the way that I see fit. And also on the First Amendment says I can express myself, my religious freedom, say that I can practice my religion anywhere, any way I want, and you can't stop me. It expressly says that in the First Amendment. So here we are at a time where we are battling, and I want to see if I kept any. The sisters the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, they're still doing indulgence. They're still doing that out at Dodger Field, and the nuns are defending themselves, and other people are saying that they should be able to do it, but we're not going to have this night or that night. And here you are, you just have someone that quotes the Bible at a school board meeting, and here come the book burners. Every other book, sexualized book, belongs in the school system. We don't care how young the kids are. It needs to be on the shelves in schools. No matter how sexualized and sexually charged it is, it should be there. You can't read any excerpts from it out loud at a school board meeting. Why? Because there might be kids at the meeting, but it's in the school library. Quote the Bible, that book needs to be burned and banned. Just thought I'd point it out. Thought it was interesting. Coming up in a moment, speaking of interesting, my good friend Kristen Bench joins me, CEO of KB Advisory Groups. We're going to talk about the economy, the retail world, and what it says about the direction we're heading. Next.
Strong. strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. The reason why we play the music, it is the only guest we have with their own walk-up music. It's Kristen Bentz from KB Advisory Group. And don't fear the Reaper, because she's the only one that can make you giggle through bad news. And that's the best I can do on the intro, Kristen. How are you?
That's a great intro. I'll take it on this Friday. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. You got to help me sort some things out. I want to read a headline to you, and I need you to help me decipher what this means. I'm being serious about this. It's about unemployment and about the payroll. Payroll soars by 339,000, but people employed tumbled by 310,000, sending the unemployment rate higher. Can you explain that to everyone?
I will do my best. So remember, all of these numbers are kind of nebulous right now, and they will probably be revised down, so don't freak out. Okay, so when folks are transitioning from unemployed to looking for work to finding work, those are all ranked in different ways within these numbers, okay, with non-farm payrolls, right?
Yes.
Non-farm payrolls meaning businesses, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when they transition out, sometimes those numbers get cross-cut and make it look like there's higher unemployment. But remember all those tech layoffs we had last month? So I think all of that is kind of flowing through into the numbers. The other interesting fact is wages are down. So people look at this and think, oh, my gosh, this is an amazing blowout number, robust labor market. But most of the jobs, if you really look at the composite of hiring, those are folks that need to work for health insurance and that sort of thing, and benefits after all the COVID benefits ended. So they're fleeing back into the workforce, but they're not exactly looking for these very high paying jobs. They're just working to like basically survive. So it's not the best kind of. So the consumer is very anxious. So my word to you is don't confuse consumer anxiety with a robust labor market.
Okay, so I'm still confused, which I know is not going to surprise you. Did we gain jobs or did we lose jobs?
We gained jobs.
Okay.
That'll probably, there's a lot of seasonality into this too, because it's the time of the year where people are like, okay, maybe I can stay home on the couch with my parents and, you know, wait out the summer. And then other folks are like, well, I've got to get, you know, back to work because all of these benefits are ending that I was receiving. So we did gain jobs. I don't think it's going to be as large a number as it appears. So next month, they'll probably revise that down.
Okay.
Yes, there are more jobs, but it really is kind of how robust are those jobs and the why behind those jobs.
Okay, so then let's talk about wages, because they talked, there was a story, the White House, or I should say the Bureau of Labor Statistics, had a wage increase that was dramatically decreased. What is that telling you about wage growth?
I don't think that wage growth is robust at all. And the people that are seeking these jobs, you know, that are trying to get hired right now, they're not pushing back on salary. So like during the Great Resignation, people were kind of like bouncing around, maybe taking another job, and they were getting huge salary increases, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
That's not happening anymore. So that measure of folks that are, you know, getting employed and starting new jobs, it's really not as robust as you would think. So there's a lot of, you know, what we call a charcoal gray area, Mike, in the numbers right now and in the labor market. So it's very, very confusing, but I think it's masking a lot of unrest underneath the surface, in my opinion.
And I know that your expertise is in the retail world and what that says about the economy in the future. You talk about a bifurcated economy. Let's talk about dollar stores and missing the mark and where they're saying their consumers are going. What are they saying and what does it mean?
Well, you know, typically in times of unrest economically, you would think, oh, there's going to be a flight to the dollar stores and folks are going to trade down, which has been the case for a while. But Dollar General came out with their numbers yesterday. They had a double miss on earnings and on revenues, which is a big red flag. So when dollar stores start tanking, that's not a good sign. The biggest red flag to me is their CEO attributed the loss in consumers to consumers trading down to food banks.
Wow.
And I think you and I talked about this before, like, where do you go after Walmart? Where do you go after dollar stores? Well, here's your answer. So they're losing customers to free food banks. So that segment of the consumer, and it is extremely bifurcated, it's getting more so, haves and have nots. So they're going down to, you know, basically getting free food to support their families, which is frightening.
So how is, on the other side of this economy, how are the higher end consumers faring?
The higher end consumers are loving life. I mean, you know, I have these core four stocks that I talk about all the time. Your listeners are probably bored of hearing me talk about Lululemon, Nike, Louis Vuitton, and Restoration Hardware. All of them are killing it right now. Lulu came out with impressive numbers yesterday. These types of names that are geared toward a more flush consumer or a high-end consumer, they're more insulated to, you know, peaks and valleys in the economy. So they're thriving. So that higher-end consumer, luxury consumer, they're great. They're spending, they're happy, they're out there, they're traveling, they're doing, they're going to restaurants, they're buying yoga wear,
yep.
They're buying footwear, they're doing all the things. But it's that lower-end consumer that is really under pressure.
So when you look at what a couple of things in the labor market that I saw, one that said older Americans are going back to work, coming out of retirement to make ends meet. What does that say to the labor force? But the other question for me about all of this is we're going to be coming into the holidays and school close and all this other stuff. Are we headed toward a recession? Did the debt ceiling help avoid that? What are we looking at in the next 3 to 6 months?
Well, you know, my contention has always been that we already are in a mild recession and have been. It's a very political term, and it takes about 8 weird economists somewhere that you've never heard of that decide, you know, when we're in a recession, when we're not. But you basically look at the numbers and you watch how people are spending their money. So when folks are going back to work because they can't afford to be retired anymore because of intense inflation and interest rates, that's not good. I always think older folks in the workforce, especially framing this in prospective retail, is great because they're on time, they love their job, they're happy to be there, they're engaged, they love being there, and it's just a solid, I'm all for that. But in, you know, retrospect, things are not as rosy, you know, on the low end. As far as back to school, the other thing that, you know, you and I wanted to talk about is student loans are about to come back into repayment. And with the debt ceiling deal, which is not a great deal, by the way, they have moved up the date from August 30th for repayment to July 31st. And that's going to come right into back to school. And you've got, you know, 27 million direct loans out there that are in forbearance. That's about $1 trillion, right, in loan balances.
You sent me a chart of auto loan defaults, 18 to 29. Yeah. And now if they've got to start paying back student loans, does that number even increase more than you showed me?
Oh, absolutely. And right now, those seriously delinquent customers that are in 18 to 29 demo, that's at 2008 levels. So just think about that.
Yeah.
And once they've got to, you know, I think the average repayment is like $350 a month on average. Okay, if you're not expecting that, you're about to get a serious wake-up call to like your daily, you know, economic reality. And that's going to flow through in footwear, apparel, services, dining out, travel, all that stuff. And it's just going to come to a screeching halt. No one's really talking about it.
All right, Kristen, tell them where they can find you on social media because you are a very educational and fun follow.
Especially today.
Yes, absolutely.
You can find me on Twitter at Kristen Benz. And then you can find me on Instagram, which is a little bit more fun, at Kristen middle initial C Benz. And that's it.
Yeah,
that's where I'm at.
B-E-N-T-Z is the last name.
B-E-N-T-Z. That's right.
Kristen, thank you as always. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
It's my pleasure.
All right. That's Kristen Benz, KB Advisory Group. Great follow on social media. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about the classified document scandal with a former president. Are there audio recordings where he's discussing it? Talk about that in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate you spending some time with the show. Hope you got a great weekend planned. Washington Post story headline, why a recording of Trump discussing classified documents would be important. And that would be important in this case that's against him. You know, people are still going after him. I don't think that there's going to be much teeth in this whole classified document thing, because what we've found out is that many other presidents and vice presidents have done the same thing. And so I'm not clouding the issue, but a lot of this is going to have to do with who you like or dislike more. You're going to see people on my side of the aisle say, hang on a minute. You know, not only did Joe Biden do exactly the same thing, he did it as a United States senator. There is no reason ever for a United States senator to have documents outside of a SCIF ever. President and vice president, different because of their schedules and how things are with them. They do set the standard. And I'm not making excuses for bad behavior. I'm not making excuses for people that have classified documents that they're not handling like they're classified documents. I'm just wondering how far that part of it's going to go. The election integrity stuff continues. Georgia is continuing to pursue Trump for election interference. That's still going on. But to me, the election interference stuff and the biggest issue when it comes to those things, I know I talked about this just a little bit, and I guess I want to go just to talk about it a little bit deeper. Wherever you stand on the issue, I've defended the character of people that I know and that I say to you are good people, and I can disagree with someone adamantly and still respect them if they're a good person. I just disagree with them. It happens all the time within my own party. Bill Gates, the supervisor in the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, is not seeking re-election because of threats against him. He has talked about being diagnosed with PTSD, and then there are people that are mocking him for that. And I would just say this is the kind of contemptible behavior that has outraged me and so many others on both sides of every issue. Clint Hickman had over 100 people outside of his home where his wife and children were inside. Sheriff's deputies had to be deployed there because of the rowdy crowd out in front of his house. Now, I would say if you've listened to the show, I was same thing about the people pro awful behavior that should be stopped. But the idea that we can't disagree with someone without calling them an evil person, and it isn't the majority. I don't think it's even close to the majority. But these are the people that make headlines. These are the people that get the attention. And these are the ones that seem to be held up in the highest esteem by certain groups of people. I'll be honest, it's a weird behavior that doesn't usually happen. I think there are a lot of very good people out there that have gotten so close to this issue of election integrity that they've gotten so angry that they're behaving in a way that should embarrass them and probably someday will. I've used this example before. If we all were standing, and I'm saying all of us, we don't know each other. Well, you know, we probably don't know each other as I'm talking. But if we were all standing at the corner waiting to cross the street to get into the Footprint Center to watch the Suns play a game, and one of the people in the group, whoever it was, standing at the traffic light, threw a water bottle at a police officer, what would you do? Chances are you distance yourself from that person. I'd point them out and tell the cop that's who threw it. We would not tolerate that kind of behavior, even if they were a Suns fan. If you were inside the arena and the referee made a horrible call and somebody threw something at the referee, you would distance yourself from that person, even if they were on your same team. That is a rational way to behave. And here we are in the political world where we've got people treating other human beings so badly that he's been diagnosed as with PTSD, and he's a good guy, and we're losing someone in that seat. There are many people that don't think he should have it. You're right. You have a right to that opinion and vote him out. But the fact that he's leaving public service because of the way he's been treated by usually anonymous people threatening him and his family is despicable. And if you're part of the crowd that despises him and despises his political decisions, you should be the angriest, because those people align themselves with you. You can say, like I've said many times, this person or this person or this person, I still believe is a good person. I'm still friends with them. I still have respect for them. I just think they're completely wrong on this issue. I mean, we're older now. We're adults. We're supposed to not be children. And this childish behavior has led to someone having a very, very, very difficult time. And it's sad. Coming up just after 10 o'clock, the debt ceiling. We're going to talk about the debt ceiling and our conversation with Juan Siscomani. It's all coming up next.